The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we will cover the Austin FC news of the week. We will break down this weekend's results, and then we will preview the Red Bulls and Galaxy matches coming up this week with Apple TV's Jamie Watson, who returns to the show. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm not joined by Jeremiah Bentley, but still by someone within the Moon Tower Soccer family. It is Swoon Tower Soccer's own, Mike Crignola. Mike, thanks so much for joining me.
Glad to be here, Landon. Appreciate being able to fill in because Jeremiah blew us off.
That's right. He's down old El Paso way.
Oh, making some salsa?
I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what Jeremiah does. Going, probably wearing a tuxedo at some gala or something. I think that's what he does for his job.
It's like a professional attendee.
Yeah, that's right. I had a friend report a Mike Crignola sighting in the wild.
Oh, was it me or just my car?
I think it was you. No, it was you for sure. So my friend PJ said he went to a Matt and Kim concert.
Oh, yeah.
And saw you and your friends. And he said that dude brought the energy to the crowd.
Yeah.
And, that's true. And I told him, I was like, yeah, that sounds like Mike. Continued on to tell him the story of you tearing your Achilles tendon while in a mosh pit.
Yeah. So that show reminded me of why, of like the fact that I'm 38 as opposed to the last time I saw Matt and Kim when I was 28. But very fun show. PJ actually messaged me after the fact and was like, hey, I didn't say anything, but hi. And it was really nice. My nephew, who I was with, saw me at one point like make a gesture, and he thought I was waving to PJ because PJ was wearing an Austin FC shirt.
Oh,
and my nephew goes, I just assume anyone wearing their gear, you already know.
A statement that was once true, but no longer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I was like, 3 years ago, yes.
All right, let's jump into Austin FC news of the week. Let's start off with some FACito. So Austin FC 2 lost to Colorado Rapids 2, currently sitting first place in the West. So not that surprising of a result here. Austin started scoring off with a goal by Alfonso Campo Chavez. Really nice assist and goal there from Bobosi Biarawanga. But then Colorado comes back. They score 2. On, I think, mostly counterattack stuff, both by Remy Cabral, who I did not know. I knew this was the brother of former LA Galaxy, current Colorado Rapids player, Kevin Cabral.
I was going to ask if they were related.
I learned.
They're brothers?
They are twin brothers.
Twins?
Yes. And so, which like makes this feel like a little bit unfair, knowing that, right?
Are they identical twins? I've never seen the two of them next to each other.
I haven't seen them that close, but Remy has the exact same hair.
What if they're doing a body switch, like a Freaky Friday, not a Freaky Friday, Parent Trap situation. And it's actually Kevin scoring all these goals.
Kevin plays in Remy's body every Friday.
Yeah, I didn't mean Freaky Friday, but honestly, that might work better.
It was also a team. One of the assists I see here in the notes was by Darren Yappy, who was starting for the Rapids for a chunk of the season. And so it's not hard to see why this Colorado team has been very good a lot of the year. But also, like, Austin's been playing a lot of younger guys. They had Kip Keller was still out with injury after coming off early last week. Joe Hafferty and Chek Torre did not start this game. And so it's kind of a rotated lineup. I think, the center mid's name? Alonso Ramirez, who is a creative six, started as a center back next to Sal Mazzaferro. So a pretty rotated team. And so it's like, I don't know. It's not super surprising that this team is struggling a bit more than they were at the beginning of the season based on.
I think it's interesting. that Colorado has chosen to like stack their MLS Next Pro team. Meanwhile, it feels like Austin is doing the opposite by taking players like CJ and putting them with the first team. And like it's in, you know, Anthony DeAnda getting so many more minutes now, even though he's so young. It's like a polar opposite philosophy from how the Red Bulls are managing theirs.
Yeah. And I've talked to some people who don't like that. Do you have a problem with that approach? Like what is your take on that?
Yeah, I grew up a baseball fan. I know we've talked about this a decent amount. And so I always liken the FACito games to minor league baseball, AAA, right? Where you will have players to fill out a roster, and then you'll have the players that need that little bit of extra seasoning before they're ready, or maybe they're back on like a rehab assignment situation, right? To make sure that they are ready to come back to get first team minutes.
Which we saw Maxime Crépeau played several games with LAFC2 as he was rehabbing to get back to the first team.
Exactly. And so that's kind of how I've seen FACito's like role in the Austin FC pyramid, for lack of a better term, right? That bridge between the academy and the first team, or a place to store kind of the emergency reserves, or a place to like finish off development before they come into the system fully. And so I go to those matches and I watch that team 100% for the vibes and 0% for the results. What about you?
Yeah. No, I think that's the right take. Like we talked about this on the show whenever they announced the team name for Austin FC 2, and a lot of people were really disappointed that it wasn't something more fun. And my take on it then was, this name is very indicative of what this team is. Like it does not exist to win necessarily. It does not exist to like build a second brand under the Austin FC umbrella. This is a development team. And so all of what you said is exactly right. Like it is there to create players for the first team eventually. And so any opportunity they get to help the first team in some way, they're going to take that opportunity over any negative result to Austin FC 2. And we know of several occasions where that's happened already. That will continue to happen, and that's fine. Like I know that we all have kind of fallen in love with the second team, but yeah, think of it as a AAA baseball team. Like your favorite guys are not going to be there long and may not get minutes on the first team either, but like that's kind of just part of it.
Although I will say, Landon, that like right now, FACito is in third, and if they secure that, we get a home playoff match, right?
That's right.
So if we get a home playoff match, I want to watch CJ Fodre go in and just wreck shop. So like I'm a little, you know, I want to have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah, that is the situation where I'm curious if maybe they would, like, if there are some guys who are kind of fringe going back and forth, if they would say like, okay, this is a playoff match, this is more useful, especially if the first team loses a couple of games and are out of playoff contention, like which is more useful, CJ Fodre getting 30 with the first team or CJ Fodre going 90 and winning a title with the second team?
Yeah. Like the pressure of a playoff race.
Yeah. That's development right there. And so I think that's a harder call, but like, right now, like I'm fine with CJ being on the bench and playing 5 minutes as opposed to playing 90 against competition who isn't always making him better, probably.
Also, we need wingers. So, same.
So setting up the kind of the playoff situation for Austin FC 2, they play their final regular season game in Arlington against North Texas SC. If they get 2 points, which is achieved by a draw and winning the penalty shootout, they secure third place and a home playoff spot. If they lose and Sporting Kansas City to win, then we will drop to fourth place. In that instance, First place gets a bye. Second and third place choose their opponents, which I think is super fun.
I think that's so fun.
So if we're in fourth place, if we get chosen, then we will play our playoff game away. If we don't get chosen, we'll play it at home against whoever is remaining among the teams.
The leftover.
Yeah, the leftovers of the playoff teams we will play at home. So there's a pretty good chance either way that we still get a home playoff match, but it would be nice to secure it in Arlington on Sunday.
Yeah. I both hope for that and commend the people who are trying to make this a doubleheader of Austin FC. I don't know if you've heard about this, but turns out with the timing of the kickoff for that Arlington match and our home match against the Galaxy, it is technically possible to travel from Arlington back to Austin, both by car and airplane. And so there are some folks who are trying to do exactly that.
God bless those people. I'm not doing
it. What an incredible trip. Also, it would be so stressful.
I know.
But I hope A, that more people do it, and B, that it is a rad story. I can't wait to hear about it. We should probably have them on for an interview on at least Swoon Tower, if not main feed. Landon, don't be a coward.
All right, let's move on to another big event happening this week, which is the cornhole tournament that Mike and Steph are going to be competing in.
Yeah, we are competing in the Unite for Answers night, sponsored by the Bobby Jones Chiari Foundation, Friday, September 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Hop Squad. We are second build. Actually, we're not even on this poster because apparently Brad Stuver and his dad get higher billing than us still, and that's fine. I get it.
Yeah, you can't put Ron second, Bill.
Yeah. So Ron and his son will be competing against the winner of this cornhole tournament that's being put on by Kerry Tillery. And there will be raffles. There will be like a whole night of events with proceeds donated. Proceeds going to the Bobby Jones Chiari Foundation.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's still spots to sign up for the tournament, but even if you're not participating, you can still show up and kind of support the cause. That's and right. Watch Mike and Steph run the table.
Or, you know, maybe we get out in the first round and then everybody, we just hang out and drink beers and heckle cornhole.
Sounds great. what else do we got on the news here, Mike?
Yeah, we have got, so the Austin FC Academy has come back from their second annual PSV Eindhoven trip. So this is kind of a cool byproduct of our little partnership here with PSV that our kids get to go and visit a place with bicycles. I know that kind of undercuts what it is, but it does say here in the article that part of their trip was going to see iconic locations such as the Anne Frank House and the Rijksmuseum and experience the city's famous bike culture. So like it is part of their call out right in the article itself that bikes are special and cool, and in Austin not all the time.
you joke, but this is like a really cool part of this thing where like some of these kids who like I know like soccer culture in the US being as it is, many of these kids probably have left the country with their families or whatever before, but a lot of them probably haven't. And what like this is kind of like a study abroad trip for them, which I know for me and for you were like very important moments in our lives and like in our development as adults. And so the soccer part alone is very, very cool. But for some of these kids to get to leave the country and like kind of expand their horizons that way, I think that's awesome as well. And so hopefully these kids can come back both the soccer experience and the life experience and kind of build upon that and become, more expanded minded humans.
Yeah. Also, recognizing the danger of riding a bike in Texas versus riding a bike in a place that is built for them. But, you know, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
I do want to call out that our U17s played a bunch of teams from the Netherlands and Belgium and did pretty well. So some of the teams that they competed against, Belgian side Royal Union Saint-Gilloise. I'm not French.
Nailed it.
So yeah, nailed it. They won 3-0 against them. The second match that they played was against Sparta Rotterdam, a 0-0 draw. So we can keep a clean sheet somewhere. The Academy went on to defeat OH Leuven 2-1 and then tied against PSV's U17 2-2 in their final match. So pretty good results for this, like, you know, intercontinental trip.
Yeah, you take these results, you take the like places in the table all the way through the Academy in just like MLS next seasons, and then plus the GA Cup win by the U15s. Like, it's going to be really cool in 3 or 4 years when some of these guys are of age to start kind of cracking the first team and seeing what they can do on that level. But good things all around from Austin FC Academy.
Yeah. Massive shout outs also. Irvin Torres featured in that preseason trip as well. So he got a little taste of Europe. Hopefully we keep him a little bit longer than that, but yeah. Neat to see him getting started.
You can't go yet, Irvin.
That's right.
All right. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we will review the Portland Timbers match. Hang tight. We'll be right back with more Moon Tower Soccer. No one is around. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FVF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FVF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education.
You can go to fvf.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's fvf.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. I didn't do a fun math thing, and I'm really sorry, and I'm letting Jeremiah down. Hopefully he forgives me.
That's fine. Mike, you seem like a credit union kind of guy. Are you a credit union banker?
Dyed in the wool, Landon. Dyed in the wool credit union banker. Highly recommend.
You're no sucker. You're not paying those fees.
That's right. And you'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union if you also get on the game.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
The other benefit that Amplify is doing here is offering free parking at the Esperanza branch, minutes away from the stadium, for any Moontower listener. Visit the website and provide your email address and details about your car for free parking. You'll need to RSVP so the Amplify's facilities team knows not to tow your car. Do you think if I just email them and say, hey, mine's the crazy one, like I'll be covered?
I have walked past your car both in the last 2 home games and spotted it immediately, Mike. I'm not going to dox you and say exactly what it looks like, but it's hard to miss.
Before we hop into the Portland Timbers review, Landon, I wanted to know, at this Portland game, Austin hit 50 straight sellouts. That's a crazy number. You know, they tell us every time that this is the longest active MLS sellout streak. Do you know what the league record is?
I do not. I have no idea. If I had to guess, I would say, is it the Portland Timbers?
It is not the Portland Timbers. It is a Western Conference team.
It's not the Sounders because their stadium's too big.
Nope. It's Sporting Kansas City.
Okay.
And do you know how many games Kansas City sold out in a row?
I have no idea. Tell me, Mike.
125.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. That's another 3 years of matches plus. Do you think Austin can get there?
if we have three more 2022s, yes. But if we have three more 2023s, then no.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Sporting Kansas City's, for the record, ended in 2019. And so, I mean, they've been a pretty dominant team in the West for a long time. Makes sense that, you know, they're always in the thick of it. And to your point, sometimes that feels pretty important to maintaining a sellout streak.
Yeah. And I think this is worth mentioning. I know a lot of people, when they hear the sellout, like, oh, another sellout at Q2 Stadium. A sellout is dictated by how many tickets were distributed, not how many people actually came in through the gate. And so that is why the sellout streak is technically probably still true. But if you keep being bad and fewer people keep coming, you can only give away so many tickets.
Yeah, I think the fact that season ticket renewals is 97% or whatever, again, right, shows that there's a good chance that the sellout streak continues through next season. But I don't think it's the given that it has been the first three.
Yeah, well, in this, the 50 whatever if consecutive home sellout, Austin FC fell to the Portland Timbers 2-1, making that 7 winless in all competitions going back to the start of League's Cup. I tweeted after this game, one tweet that a lot of people agreed with, and then another tweet that maybe ruffled a few feathers. But the first one said that I've said to many people this week that if this team can't beat Portland in this game with these stakes without Diego Chara, they don't deserve to make the playoffs. And I think most people agreed with this one. The other one I said that I followed up with was, and if the only thing you're yelling about after this one is Josh Wolf, you're not paying attention. Mike, I think some people may have misunderstood this tweet. Do you want to try to translate for me how maybe what I meant, or maybe what I should have said?
Yeah, I can give this a shot. If I were to read the inference in this tweet, I would say Landon thought our performance was poor and the plan seemed pretty good until it wasn't executed.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I think a lot of people took it as me saying, if you think Josh Wolf shouldn't be the coach anymore, you're a stupid idiot and I hate you. And that is absolutely not what I meant. What I meant was that on a macro level, if you think the coach should be fired, fair enough. We're on like a hair's breadth away from not making the playoffs. We haven't won in 7 games. Like, there's ample grounds to fire almost anybody involved with this team at this point. And so that's not the point I'm making. But there is, and I'd say this is a small percentage of Austin FC fans who, regardless of the result, regardless of what happens in the game, well, that's the only thing they'll talk about. It's like, Josh Wolf has to go. It's like, you weren't watching the same game I did, because we created chances, we were getting in dangerous moments, and the players just beefed it over and over and over. And so this is a stat from Zach from the North End. So Austin FC is 5th in the entire MLS in big chances created. This is a stat, big chances, as notated by FotMob. 5th in the MLS in big chances created, and then 5th in MLS in big chances missed. And so if you are creating chances, that is not an indictment of the system. And then if you are then missing those chances, that is an indictment of players and execution on the day. And so that was my main point, is that, yeah, like, I'm not going to say this game plan was perfect and that the coaching staff and everything did everything perfectly right, but that was not the biggest problem on this day. And if your biggest takeaway was Wolf's gotta go, then, like, I don't know how to respond to that.
I think it's important, as before we move on from big chances, because I think this is, like, indicative of so many of our experiences this year. I do want to define it according to Opta. A big chance is a chance where a player is favored to score with respect to the goalkeeper. So big chance takes into consideration the position a shot is taken from, the path of the ball to the goal, and the amount of pressure on the player shooting the ball. So, like, basically, did we get in position where we should have scored?
According to FotMob, 5 times, and we blew 4 of them. Not to mention of probably a few others that didn't register as anything.
Yeah. Rewatching this match, I was just as perplexed as I was in the stadium how the first half ended, not with us up 4-0. It was a tough one.
And again, before we move on, I know this, again, a small part of the Austin FC fan base is going to be yelling at me right now saying, You're a front office shill. You love Josh Wolf and you just want to miss. Like, I frankly, at this point, do not care if Josh Wolf is the coach anymore. Just that this game particularly, I was much madder and much more frustrated at about 9 individual players before I was about anything to do with the game plan. Okay, let's move on to the game itself now. So Austin comes out, really strong start. Driussi gets a shot on target about 10 seconds into the game, right off of the free kick.
I had a question about that.
Yeah, go for it.
Do you think this was drawn up on the training ground? Like,
no,
the ball goes straight back to...
It was too chaotic.
The ball goes straight back to Stuver, who lumps it to, like, exactly where Zardes and Ragone are converging at the same time. And then it ends up at the feet of, like, one of our forward players.
I think the first half is drawn up, but the second half is, like,
improvisation.
Is what's supposed to happen. Like, we're going to play it to a head, try to head it on, do something at that point. But it wasn't Driussi's going to hit it first time. Like, no look shot. That wasn't drawn up. But I think you're right. The first part, it does seem to be kind of a tactic on goal kicks, or on restarts at this point, is to drop it back, play it long, and treat it as if it were a goal kick.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting to see how quickly the shot on goal happened, right? Like, that to me read as, let's punch them in the mouth before they get a chance to get set. Either way, right? Because going into this match, you asked me, would you rather see Portland's sloppy press or Portland's low block? I thought I would get a choice between the two, Landon. I know I texted you this. You didn't tell me that I would have to see both.
Well, that's what happens when you give up 2 unanswered goals, Mike, is a press turns into a low block. Okay, we also had some discussions about the lineup. So whenever the lineup drops... It's, again, as has happened several times, the graphic, as with most Austin FC games, is going to be wrong.
Yep.
Because nobody knows exactly what position somebody's going to be playing in a given game. But in this one, again, there were, like, too many midfielders, but we weren't sure what that was going to mean. And so my bets, my, like, 2 guesses were, it's either back 5 and you see Alex Ring as one of the center backs, or it's a 4-3-3 and you see Owen Wolf as a winger. I know you, like, weren't keen on either of the options.
Well,
I was,
yeah, just in general, right? I'm not keen on our current roster limitations.
Yeah, and that's so, that seemed to be where we landed, as we were like bouncing it back. It was like we wouldn't be okay with any lineup that they put up.
Yeah, it wasn't this one. It was just this one, you know.
Yeah. where I told you I was going to be upset is if they played just like the standard 4-3-3 and played Owen at the wing instead of playing Ethan Finley in that spot. Because if you're just going to play like the standard shape, Finley's the guy. Like, he's the guy to play there. And so I was like, okay, if they line up and Owen is playing wing in a 4-3-3, I'll A, be very surprised, and B, be pretty annoyed by that. And so it comes out where it's like kind of the first few moments are pretty chaotic, and so we don't ever actually get to see a shape. We finally settle into defense. It's a 4-4-2 with Owen on the left wing. And I was like, no way. Owen's going to play on the wing. This can't be right. Finally, 3 or 4 minutes in, we get a possession where we like settle into an offensive shape, and he was not playing on the wing. So the way that they are set up was a 4-4-2 in defense, which was flat back four with the folks you would guess. Then Alex Ring and Danny Pereira playing in the middle of another line of four. Owen Wolf on the left side, Emiliano Rigoni on the right side, and then Driussi and Zarias up top. So that's kind of the standard defensive shape. Then as we rotated into attack, John Gallagher would rotate up to a winger. And so the front line would be Gallagher, Zardes, Rigoni. Rigoni stayed high and would stay on the right side. Owen Wolf would rotate into the midfield and be the deeper two. So it's going to be this 3-2-2-3 shape that we've seen on and off. It's Danny Pereira and then Owen Wolf shifting into the deeper lying midfield spot next to him. And then Driussi and Alex Ring in the two attacking midfield spots. And then Nick Lima shifting into a back three with the other two true center backs. And so that is what it was. After seeing that, I was more okay with it. I think, and I don't think Owen had a bad game. I think he had a few bad moments that stood out and were obvious and hurt the team. But overall, I didn't think he had a bad game. I still think I would have preferred to see Valencia start this game and play just the straight up back five, true wing backs, and have Valencia sit a little deeper and just kind of play safety.
Yeah, I think early on, Owen looked really, really good. He had a couple of incredible line breaking passes. I took note on one in the 18th that just like was so clean. And then like when he receives the ball on the half turn, it's just like it. Nobody on our team can do it like that.
It's like whenever he's brave enough to do it, because he is still a little too cautious sometimes, well, too quick to play backwards, afraid to turn. But whenever he does receive and turns and breaks, it is like you're right. There's nobody else on the team who can do that specific thing like he can.
And it was crazy because when he does it in the 29th, like he passes the ball straight to Driussi, who is in a similar position, and immediately gets dispossessed on his turn. And then Owen comes in and crushes Yimi Chara to win the ball back. And like, that to me is the most like Owen Wolf sequence, right? Like this beautiful turn, a pass that's a little bit more ambitious than it should be. And then like this bone crunching tackle on one of the league's best midfielders, just back to back to back. That's the peak of Owen Wolf, right? At least in 2023, that's one of the cleanest things, like the cleanest sequences he's had. But I noticed my notes on Owen basically stop after the 40th minute.
Yeah.
Until he gets a yellow later in the game.
Yeah. And I think we'll talk more about specific mistakes, but another thing I'll note just based on like him versus Valencia is I think Portland's first big chance is like around the 30th minute or so, and it's a moment where Austin is pressed up a little bit high, Owen steps up to kind of assist in the press, and they spring Asprilla kind of cheating behind him, so he like doesn't step fast enough to actually affect the press, and then also gets beaten behind. And those are the little moments, like, I mean, that happens to a lot of players, but those are the moments where I just feel like Valencia doesn't get caught out there. He's playing more conservative. He'll sit deeper and he's not going to get beat in that moment. And so that's kind of why I wanted to see it. But like you said, Valencia is not receiving those things on the half turn and carrying the ball forward ever either. So there's trade-offs. So let's go through kind of the first few moments of the game here. So we got to the kickoff, got a shot immediately. The resulting corner leads to a Ragone goal before a minute. This is like the 55th second of the game.
Yeah.
And Ragone scores a goal. It's disallowed correctly because it's offside. But then after that, there's Jossie Zarda's header from a Ragone cross in the 9th minute off the post. Goes for a throw-in. That throw-in leads to a Driussi header in the box that's on target, a really good David Bingham save. And then I think in the 22nd, 24th, and 26th minute, there's several other big chances, one of which is, I think, an Owen Wolf cross into Zardes. He chests it down for Ring. And I think this probably clocks as one of those big chances that Ring then scuffs and just kind of like bounces out, like slowly trickles out of bounds. But lots of really,
really good.
Yeah, lots of really big chances. And as you were saying, we came out quick and was like, okay, we're going to play aggressive. We're going to punch him in the mouth. As we got to like the 20th minute or so, I then started thinking, it's going to happen again, isn't it? We're going to be the better team. We're not going to score. They're going to score and the game's going to be over. And that is eventually what happened. 39th minute. Portland gets a couple of chances and then they capitalize on a mistake here. So Dairon Asprilla, who's a big, like
he's gigantic.
A large winger.
I knew he was big and we've seen him in the past, and Gallagher has gotten bigger over the years, right, with Austin. And so I'm in my head, I think, oh, John Gallagher's a pretty big guy. He's put on some weight. And then Dairon just like you could, he reminds me of the used car salesman meme, right? Like you're slapping the roof of Dairon Asprilla and you're like, you could fit so many John Gallaghers in this guy. Like he's just so big.
Yeah.
How is he so big and quick?
Yeah. So him and Owen are in a challenge at the top of the box and he bullies Owen. And this is one of the moments where I think Owen could have done a bit better, either to just know that Dairon Asprilla is going to beat you up if you go into a physical challenge like that. But he drives past him into the box, cuts it back towards the penalty spot. There are Portland players making good runs in the box, but it gets through all of them. Alex Ring is on the backside, swings his leg to clear it just to get it out of the box. And he scuffs it, clears it straight back inside. It hits Felipe Mora in the gut, falls down, and he smashes it in from 6 yards. Yeah. And so it's like, again, two little mistakes, not little mistakes. The second one's pretty big, but that lead to just a stupid goal. And like Alex Ring should do better, but it's really a shame that he's the one that was in that moment. Cause I feel like he was one of the few bright spots on the pitch for most of the night.
Yeah. I do feel a pang of jealousy that Alex Ring can lay the ball off in the box instead of shooting, because sometimes like we need him to do that, and so like I wish he would do it for us, but that being said, like what a gut punch of a goal. Everything up until this moment had been Austin's way. There was, you know, two moments of brief counterattacks that were snuffed out. Danny was looking like really responsible in the midfield, like coming back and cleaning up a bunch of stuff throughout the beginning and like really setting that pace and that tempo. And then my note for immediately after this is pace plummets. Like it's like two different teams were playing from the 39th on pre the 38th minute.
Yeah, it's, I wish I could remember who said this, but they used the phrase that this team can't take a punch, that just like the most glass jawed team you've ever seen. Cause,
but they not physically, so good. Right? Because like Nick,
no,
Lima,
it's like emotionally.
Nick Lima almost died in the 21st minute. And if he were, yeah. if he were built like any other man, he might have, right? Like his neck, I am convinced, because it's so gigantic, held his head like on his body safely.
Yeah.
Through the rest of that, because when I watched this replay, it is a graphic fall. When Portland, like when Nick goes up for that header and gets kind of chopped, and for him to get back up and B, keep playing, is entirely due to the fact that he has the most muscle.
A man with a smaller neck would have died that night.
Yeah. And so like it's like a physical intensity is not the problem, right? It's like this resilience when things fall apart.
Yeah. And that is a part of the game where if you were to point a finger back at the coaching staff, I think this is an area where you can do it. I don't think you can let the players completely off the hook for it, but there are teams in MLS and around the world where I think like RSL is, for the last several years, is like a team's like, they're not that good, but they fight really hard and they never give up like that. And like people credit Mastroeni for that. And so it is a thing that like as many like tropes as there are in soccer that some of them may or may not be true. I think this one probably is where the players need to take some responsibility as well. But I think there is a psychological aspect and an inspirational aspect that a coaching staff can bring that maybe isn't happening in this team right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it doesn't seem like there's a like an impetus to fix it. Whenever in the post game, right, people asked Josh, like, you've mentioned that lack of finishing is one of the problems that we have. Like, is there anything that you can do to fix that? Or is it just a matter of luck? And he just didn't have an answer for the question. And it was really like indicative of that space of like, how do you quantify motivation and like ability to motivate?
Yeah. It's not just in sports, but in anything. Like there is kind of an inexplicable magic to it that like you can't really teach people.
Yeah.
And some people can do it and some people can't.
Yeah. No matter how smart you are, there's not an equation to solve. There's no winger in defense and six in attack type unlock for motivation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I will say though, even after that really tough goal, watching Danny and Owen play against Yimi Chara and hold their own against him was really cool to see from a like individual performance standpoint. Diego is the Chara brother that I fear the most in my like waking nightmares, but Yimi is really good. And to watch them like be able to contain him the whole game was really impressive. So credit where it's due, as well as the disappointing 38th minute goal.
Yeah. So 38th minute goal, as we said, shatters the emotional glass jaw of Austin FC. The second goal comes in the 64th minute. Yimi Chara puts in a cross from the right side. Leo Väisänen, I guess, just like misreads it because he takes a big step forward and jumps to win the ball and like looks pretty confident doing it. But then the ball just goes way over his head. And it almost seems like had he just stayed where he was and jumped, he could have won it. And so I don't know what he was seeing there, but it falls to who was it? Felipe Mora. Falls to Felipe Mora. And
because the ball cleverly came in from Yimi.
Just bounces it off his chest because he sees Evander running onto the backside and just bounces it right into Evander's path off of his chest. Evander slots it right past Duver from like 4 yards out or something. And so, I mean, this comes after, again, talking about like the emotional state of the players. it comes after a really frustrating stretch of play where Austin couldn't win the ball. They couldn't keep the ball when they did win it. And the players looked tired and upset with themselves and upset with each other. Cause it was like a string of like one of these little moments where we get the ball and someone plays a pass to the ball boy or, yeah. There's like
Owen had just gotten a yellow for that late sliding tackle to win a ball back after giving it up. And then immediately after that, Evander was like unmarked at the top of the box, looking like 2022 Driussi. And then immediately after that, Julio got a yellow on a turnover, like that he knew he was committing a yellow card offense at the time. But like it was the only thing that we could do to slow the game down a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when this cross or the ball in from Yimi Chara comes in to Mora is like at the culmination of these like four other frustrating moments.
Yeah. Austin FC gets a glimmer of hope in the 75th minute. Julio Cascante finds Ring in between lines. He turns, makes a clever little move in behind the defender. And Driussi's making a run right up the gut. Ring plays a really nice ball over the top, finds Driussi in the box, brings it down well. He tries to chip David Bingham. Bingham does well and kind of stands his ground and doesn't go down. Gets a hand to it, but it falls straight back to Driussi, who shoots again. And Bingham gets a hand or a thigh or something to it, but he couldn't keep this one out, and this one goes in. The stage is set for the late draw at that point. I think there was a little bit of hope for a bit, but as the game went on, it never felt like it was going to happen. I think there's a couple of decent chances.
I was going to say, closer to the attacking goal in the second half, it was starting to feel inevitable that we were going to score. We were getting chances in. Alex Ring had that shot that goes just over the crossbar. Like there were a few moments, but something that I had noticed in the stadium even, and it was like a lot worse on the replay, was when Ragone and Gallagher are on the same side of the field, they like end up standing next to each other a lot, taking away a lot of like movement opportunity on that left-hand side. And so like now we're forced to go back to the right again. And it wasn't as productive as that left-hand side had been prior to Ragone's move over there.
Yeah. And there's a thing I noticed was, and I think we talked about this on the show earlier in the season when we were doing this kind of rotation into like from 4-4-2 to 3-2-2-3, was John Gallagher, when he would get the ball over on the left-hand side, a lot of times like when he's most dangerous is when he has a winger and a player inside to kind of play that triangle game with. And when he would get the ball over there, because he was the fullback to the winger, it's got to be one of those central mids. And if they're not there, the play just fizzles out. And so on the other side, Lima was pushing up high enough to kind of give support to Ragone as he received the ball on that side, but Gallagher wasn't getting that on his side. And so it's just like a lot of stuff was fizzling out. And then later in the game, it falls into like very like horseshoe of sadness territory. And I know like I get frustrated with this. I know a lot of people get frustrated with the team just like passing the ball backwards and starting over so frequently. Sometimes I think it is, it's the players are too comfortable doing that in some situations, but oftentimes I think the most frustrating part is why they ended up in a situation where that is the only option, and they'll play the ball around, move the ball around, get to a position, and then there's not an option. They're not acting with enough urgency. And people talk about like the lack of pace, like the lack of foot speed on this team. I think the worst thing is the lack of speed of thought
ball movement
in the team. And yeah, ball movement too, but like you have like just seeing things, being proactive, being aggressive. And so often late in this game, this has happened a lot of games and in this game where it moves over to one side, we'll play a switch, and then we just kind of wait for the defense to get back in shape, and then they pressure you, and then the only thing you can do if you want to keep the ball is to play it backwards. And so I think I know that that pass backwards is frustrating, but we should really be frustrated with what happened before the pass backwards, because oftentimes there could have been something else there and we just played it too slow and the defense recovers and it's wasted.
Yeah. I was really hopeful on that Alex Ring cross in the 88th minute to Ragone, because we had two people crashing into the box. That's, you know, two more than sometimes. And Alex Ring on the ball, he can put it in. We just saw him do it with Seba, and now he delivers this cross in. But Ragone with the miss. And like, it wasn't the thing that bums me out is, in another world, this is like goal of the year.
Yeah,
because it's that fun, like, spinning hit, right? Like, because the cross didn't come in at the, like, at the pace that it needed to get around the defender all the way, Ragone's coming closer to the near post, and so he's got to put a weird flick on it to, like, get it back on goal. And so it's just those, like, micro adjustments that are like, are we trying to do too much, or are we making our decisions too slow, or is it a personnel thing?
The answer is yes.
Right.
Like we said, the game, that's kind of it. We get a few chances late on, but not really much after that last little push. Looking at kind of, I said like individual player performances were the thing I was most upset about. I thought Alex Ring did a pretty good job most of the game, really disruptive in the midfield, won a lot of balls back, played some good balls forward. He also scuffed two really big moments and then scuffed the clearance that led to their first goal. So mixed bag there, but overall, I thought he was a very positive presence on the field. Other than that, a few bright moments from a few players. Most people were quite bad. Emiliano Ragone was probably the most frustrating player to me. He ended up with being involved in most of our most dangerous moments in this game, but also made it had to be pushing like double digit moments where he just made a really poor decision that led to a turnover or led to us losing the ball or led to an attack fizzling out. Yeah. And
the one that sticks in my mind the most is it's later in the match and he's received the ball like pretty much in the midfield, standing next to John Gallagher pretty much, and ends up dribbling all the way back to the center of the park and like lazily flicks the ball toward Danny to like start the horseshoe recycle. But he passes it so lazily that like the Portland defense is like, or the Portland press, I guess, at this point is like right on top of them. And Danny has to do incredible Danny dribble things to get out of problems from Santi Moreno. Like,
yeah.
There's moments of just like absolute lapse of like awareness or.
Yeah. Like, there's one where he's we're pretty deep recovering from like a defensive moment and he has the ball up on the wing with, I think Zardes is like the only player past midway. He has two defenders on him and he tries to take two guys on the dribble. I'm like, A, you haven't been super successful doing that, but B, like, what are you going to do if you get past them? Like, what's your plan here? And he ends up giving it away and they get the ball going the other way. And then he plays Driussi a ball when he's like 10 yards offside one time. Just so many moments. But then he plays in that cross to Zardes and gets the shot on frame. And like he has these little moments of magic and has this ability in him that is rare in this team. But then just the mentality part of it just doesn't seem to be there all the time. Driussi is another player who I found quite frustrating in this game. Again, he's super talented, always has some moments of magic, but he gave the ball away in pretty dangerous spots several times. He tries, whenever we're down sometimes, he tries to take over the game in ways that aren't always super helpful. So one moment comes to mind in this game last night where the ball is kind of just like trickling through midfield Alex Ring is there in quite a bit of space. And Driussi like runs back and takes the ball off of Ring's foot and then tries to play a big switch with not much space, or there's like no big momentum shift, over to the far right side and kicks it out of bounds. And like, there's just like moments where like, I understand you're like, you're the guy and you feel like you need to be the guy, but pick your spots. Like, that's not a useful moment. If Alex Ring is on the ball, let him be on the ball and you move forward and get into a dangerous position. And just like, yeah, I don't know. He was very frustrating to me as well.
I think not only was he frustrating, he was frustrated. And that was coming out in his play, right? I had a note in the 91st when we're driving toward the goal and like we're doing our best to try and pull a late winner here. And Seba turns and looks to the right wing where he's expecting Nick Lima to be like taking it, like running into space. Nick's standing there, probably because he's exhausted and like abused. And like you see Seba get frustrated and then like kick the ball to where he expected Nick to be and force him to go chase it. And it's such a like a moment of like at the end of a game, I get being upset that it's not going your way and that like the rest of the team isn't exactly where you want them to be. And like that's part of the collaborative nature of a team sport, right? Yeah. And so like it felt dirty to do Nick like that after he had given so much physically throughout this match and just gotten totally abused.
Yeah.
Both by Portland and by the announcers. At one point, one of the announcers claims Dairon was unmarked on a header, like right at the start of the second half. They show the replay three times, and three times Nick Lima is jumping, full extension, waggling his head in the air, trying to hit the ball, but he's just completely erased by Dairon. Like the dude is just too big. He blocks out the sun around Nick Lima to the point that the announcers have erased him. Like, and so he's getting abused by the announcers. He's getting abused by the team. Like just Nick got done dirty on that pass at the end of the game by Seba.
One other notable moment is Will Bruin goes up for a header, comes up with a face full of blood, and then did not look well in the moments preceding that. Like this was one of the more obvious concussion moments I've ever seen in person, but it was pretty unsettling to watch.
Yeah. In the stadium, because we sit in 107, we're like on the corner, so we can see exactly what happens. And as the cross comes in and Will like winds up to smash the ball with his head, like I knew it was gonna be bad. I was not expecting it to be that bad. The amount of blood that we could see from our seats, and like, you know, we're in the corner,
and just the way he's acting very in the way,
yeah, like wouldn't sit down still, and wouldn't, yeah.
It was, yeah, I was not feeling great about that whole situation. Phil West did report that he saw him walking out of the locker room later. So that doesn't mean he's completely out of the woods, but it's a good sign to see him up and moving around of his own volition after that.
Yeah. Certainly better than it looked to be in the moment. And so I know a lot of people had flashbacks to our season one, veteran MLS player getting a head injury with Matt Beisler, and that ending up being Matt Beisler's last game.
Yeah.
I am just hoping for the best for Will, hoping for a speedy recovery.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the very least, a cool scar to tell people about. You know what I mean? He's a handsome guy. I think a scar could help.
All right. So that result leaves Austin in is it 11th place? I lost my table here.
Number one team in the world, Landon.
That result leaves Austin in 12th place. We are already talking about, we'll actually get into this with Jamie here in a bit, but playoff prospects are looking a little grim at this point. And this, we were saying this is the one of the ones they had to win. They had to win. They had to win. And they didn't do it. And so they've put themselves up against the wall. If they want to prove us wrong about their lack of a winner's mentality, the next 3 or 4 weeks is going to be the time to do it, because they're going to have to do it if they want to keep playing.
Yeah, we would really like to see some home wins and some extra playoffs, some free soccer this year. But I don't know. What do you think? What do you put our odds at now?
Oh man, low. I'm not a betting.
I know.
Man,
so I know you hate a prediction, odds,
but low. Sub 20%, maybe sub 15%.
So will a possible Copa Tejas keep you warm this offseason?
No. Maybe if we actually won it in the stadium on the day and got to celebrate in the parking lot or whatever again, that would have helped. But
yeah,
winning it the way that we could still win it is not going to feel very good.
By mail?
Yeah.
A mail-in trophy win is not going to keep you company through the rest of the season. That's fair.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Jamie Watson to preview the New York Red Bulls game and the LA Galaxy game coming up this week.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
Landon, what have you done for the community for 114 years?
Nothing, Mike, and I'm ashamed to say it.
Well, you know, you could be like the Coverts and offer our community a Ford F-150, stock number 223-0073. Before discounts, Landon, I know you're asking yourself, how much would this car cost me? And let me tell you, it would cost you $53,815. But Covert is offering a slew of discounts, including the XL STX package discount for $2,095. They're also offering a dealer discount of $5,905. And a factory rebate of $2,000. That brings the sell price after all discounts and rebates to $4,385 plus TT&L. You're going to save $10,000 with those discounts. And they're offering 3.9% APR for 60 months with approved credit from Ford Motor Company.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertfloor.com.
Landon, I got to tell you, I was curious what this car look like, what the F-150 looks like nowadays.
I'm sure it's a big, beautiful truck.
In my old days of looking at a Ford F-150, I was like, oh, it's a cute little guy. Landon, this truck is bigger than some apartments I've lived in. It is also cheaper than most apartments I've lived in. And so that to me seems like a pretty good deal.
Absolutely.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. Thanks to Sage Wilson Realty, we'll be giving away 2 tickets to an upcoming match. So fill out the form in the show notes to enter for your chance to win.
Again, this is made possible by Sage Wilson Realty. So if you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are thrilled to be joined once again by Apple TV's Jamie Watson. Jamie, thanks for joining us again, man.
Hey, Landon, thank you so much for having me on. Always love coming on to chat with you guys.
I don't think you were our first. No, maybe you were. You were one of our very first Apple TV guys to come on the show. But that feels like a lifetime ago at this point.
Yeah, I think Dre and I did the 1-0 dramatic win at home against Montreal. It was Maxi Arruti with a late goal.
Yeah.
I think that was week two. I think it was match day two or match day three. So I can't even tell you what I had for lunch today, but I could tell you that Maxi Arruti scored a goal on match day two or three against Montreal and all that. My priorities are all over the shop, aren't they?
I understand, man. Well, you are going to be on the call with Dre Cordero again on this one. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's my partner in crime for most of the year.
So you're going to be on the Red Bulls match, but you are kind enough to also be previewing the LA Galaxy with us as well. So jumping into the New York Red Bulls, they are 13th in the East currently. No wins in their last four. Only slightly worse off as far as like playoff hunt goes than Austin FC are at the moment. They've got a tough road to the playoffs, but they'll probably be looking at Austin FC coming to their place in New Jersey as one of the more winnable games for the remainder of the year. How tough is the Red Bulls' path at this point?
Yeah, I think that they came out of Leagues Cup and they had a really good performance against DC. I believe it was a 1-0 win. And obviously, Troy Lesane is now taken over as the manager. And I've known Troy for several years. I mean, going back to, we were talking earlier today ahead of this match, and he was mentioning something about when I was still playing back in 2013 with Orlando. So he knew me. And it's funny because I said this quote to him, and I'll get back to the question in just a second here, but it was a fun little sidebar to this. Troy Lesane is a name that not a lot of people will know in U.S. soccer, unless you really have gone down the list of sort of levels, right? If that's USL Championship, but also you look at smaller collegiate programs. I think this is like his 19th season as a manager. So I love the saying, one person's overnight success is another person's decade in the making. Well, for Troy Lesane, he's 19 seasons into this and finally getting his opportunity. He was a wonderful, wonderful player, but he's a 10 times better of a manager. And that's no knock on him as a player. He's just that good. And so all that's to say is this is a guy that has nearly two decades of honing his craft. And what's his craft? It's starting to form an identity and having principles and foundations and ideas that you give to players to help them to solve problems. Now, let's fast forward and tie it back into the question that you started out with. They do have a difficult road going ahead, but each and every game, although the scoreline in the last four has led to getting 3 points, I think that they're starting to find that identity where they like to press higher. They like to be able to keep the ball. It's not as chaotic as it used to be. There's a little bit more idea instead of finding the beauty in the chaos. It's let's be chaotic to the other team because they're having to chase so much because we're able to know when to keep possession, when to play and break lines, when to go back and forward east to west and then look to go, as opposed to route one, get it forward, get numbers and win it in the opposition's defensive third. So they do have a difficult schedule, but I also think there's some hope here for New York Red Bulls. And we'll talk more about the Austin game, but if we go beyond this one, they get a chance to play DC United away, which DC hit or miss at times, far better at home than they are on the road. Chicago Fire, Red Bulls get to host them. Then they have to go to Cincinnati. Very, very difficult one there. But then they have Toronto and San Jose to end the season. So I think there's a path there for the Red Bulls, but they're certainly going to be looking to this match against Austin at home as one that if they expect to make the playoffs, then they need to expect to get 3 points tonight. Tonight on Wednesday night.
Yeah, you were talking about the Red Bull style. In a recent article, Matt Doyle called it, quote, the most aesthetically challenged soccer in the league, and then went on to refer to it as a demolition derby later in the article.
Doyle's got away with words, man. He really does. I understand what he's saying. And of course, that one plays because then that means when we do this interview, we talk about that quote. So it's a wonderful quote. Doyle's very good. He's learned how to do a very good job of giving you a good quote and a good line there. I love that about Doyle.
But this is the thing that Austin, I mean, they say what you will, but they've given up very few goals. Like I think it's third lowest goals conceded in the Eastern Conference. And so it's effective on that end, but they're also, I think, second lowest goals scored in the Eastern Conference. So like who are their dangerous players and like, who needs to come on for them to be able to score some goals?
Yeah, I mean, all seven of their wins this season have been shutouts. So you're right. They're not scoring a ton of goals, but they're certainly not conceding a lot of goals. And when they are, it's very few. When you look at who their danger players are, right, who are the guys that are going to score, that's where they really lack. They don't have somebody that's just an absolute ruthless killer right now that is just in the box scoring goals and causing all sorts of problems. you start to run through their side, and you think of, you know, sort of the usual suspects, if you will. You think the Forest player or the forward players, Elias Manoel, well, he's only got 2 goals on the season. Corey Burke, well, he's got 2 goals on the season as well. Dante Van Zer, 2 goals on the season. Tom Barlow, 2 goals on the season. So you've got some players, whereas, and also Lewis Morgan out with a season-ending injury, and he's, you know, battled that pretty much all year. But even Luquinhas, one of their players that have scored goals in the past, only have, you know, a goal, and Lewis didn't score in his 5 appearances, right? So their top goal scorers, Frankie Amaya with 4, Omir Fernandez with 4. That's your top goal scorer. You're in trouble. So
if Frankie Amaya is your top goal scorer, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and that's no knock on Amaya, but
no, absolutely not.
You know, 4 goals would be a great complimentary piece from the, you know, that midfield position. He shouldn't be your leading goal scorer. And so there's so many forwards on that roster, and none of them have taken the opportunity to stake their claim as I'm going to be the forward that you can rely on to score goals this season. And that's ultimately is why New York Red Bulls in the Eastern Conference currently sitting 13th.
Mike, have you gotten a chance to watch many of the Red Bulls games, and do you have a favorite Red Bulls player?
Not this year, but I do really love both of the Nielises.
Yeah.
Okay.
This
jersey is hell. Both of them.
So jersey through and through.
And I just love from a narrative standpoint, right? I love brothers that are playing together. I think there's something so special about that, right?
And Mike, I'll back your point up. Those are going to be my 2 favorite players, because I think that Dylan, I got to spend some time with while he was with Nashville. I think he's a wonderful person. I think he's done a good job acclimating there. And at times he's had stretches where he's been, you know, sort of the reliant player in there. When they played back three, he could be a right center back. He could be one of the outside midfielders in that. When they played back four as a right back or right center back, he's very versatile. But yeah, Sean Nealis is their captain and sort of the everything about New York tough that you think in Jersey sort of guy through and through. So he's a guy that I know as a former forward or attacking player, I wouldn't want to get into a challenge with him. I wouldn't want to go up for an aerial duel with him. And half the battle before the game even kicks off is getting into the opponent's head. And I think Sean Nealis does that just by the way he carries himself 24/7.
Mike, as someone who is currently wearing a mohawk, I was going to guess that John Tolkien was going to be your favorite Red Bull player. And maybe the only player more jersey than the Nealis brothers.
Tolkien's on my list for sure as well. I just like that vibe and that energy, right? I think some of the players that Austin has missed this year carried a lot of that like bravado and that swagger, and seeing so many dudes with that on that, like on the opposition Wednesday night, makes me, you know, as an Austin fan, a little nervous about traveling up to Jersey, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the LA Galaxy game. So this one is Sunday night here in Austin. They're similar position to the Red Bulls. They're 13th place in the West on 30 points, but they've played one fewer game. So they do have that in their favor at the moment. Jamie, this Galaxy team has a lot of talent. Why are they so low on the table?
Well, I think that's why this game is a game that can't be played on paper, because the way that you think one thing should be going, it goes the other way. And when all the expectations like Austin had coming into the season don't live up to what you expect, then you find yourself at this point in the season going, what in the world has happened and how do we fix this, right? And so I think that that's the sort of the beauty and the curse of being a fan of a team is it was supposed to be so good and it hasn't been, right? And so for the Galaxy, it's weird because you don't know genuinely which team is going to show up each and every week with this group, right? Like since Leagues Cup, they have only lost once in 5. But you look back at Leagues Cup, they lost there, and then they lost going into Leagues Cup. So there was 3 in a row there that they, you know, didn't win, and they got a little bit of a break. And I think they're finally starting to get actually some production from some of their players like Douglas Costa. Diego Costa, he'd be pretty good in this league too. Douglas Costa. I think he's finally looking like he puts himself about. His talent is there. It always has been. But the effort was what was always the question about him in Major League Soccer. Yeah. And I think now he's starting to answer that question. And it's no correlation that as he does that, and Ricky Pouge continues to be dynamic and somebody that can create for himself on the dribble, one of the best dribblers in Major League Soccer. But then also, if you get overzealous and you close down at the wrong time, he's just waiting for you to take the bait, and then he slips in a player. I think that this group right now, this LA Galaxy side, is one that you have to put them on the back foot early with pressure and with a goal. And if you do, you give them reasons to quit. And at times they've taken those reasons to look like they've, you know, they haven't seen a game through. So an early goal in that match, and especially at home, could be everything that changes for it for Austin.
Yeah. And the Galaxy have given up. I guess they're tied for worst in goals allowed with Portland and Austin. And so the center backs have been a little bit lacking. I know Gaston Brugman was a guy who kind of patrolled the center for them there, and he's out with a long-term injury. And so that is a place where they are they're vulnerable. You can score on them, which is a thing.
Two things basically with this, like the Red Bulls, they don't concede a lot. You know, I think that's one thing about them. And then you look at the LA Galaxy and they do concede a lot. So it's going to be a stark contrast, I think, from Wednesday to Saturday. But now you look at this, and of course I'm going to say this, and it's going to be like a goal scoring fest against the Red Bulls. And then it's going to be a 0-0 draw or something with this. But if you're Austin, you have to look at one of these games, you know, as something that you have to win if you want to get into the playoffs. I mean, these are the kind of games against Western Conference opponents, especially teams that are below the playoff line. They're thereabouts with you. That 6-point swing, as it stands, the way it's set up, that would looks like it would put, yeah, LA Galaxy right on schedule with Austin on points. So, I mean, these are the games you have to win to get above the line. And Austin currently sit 3 points out, but I look at the rest of their schedule and I think that LA Galaxy home, Colorado away, DC United at home are three games that you have to win right there. And then I think if you can pick up a draw at Red Bulls and you pick up a draw at the very least at San Jose, that gives you 11 points. I think that you would be in good stead to make the playoffs with that. And I think the last match out of the six is LAFC. I think that's going to be a very difficult one, but there've been some good LAFC Austin battles over the last couple of years, haven't there?
Yeah. And then San Jose is our decision day game. And that one is, it's, I mean, a lot of San Jose games aren't boring anyway, but I don't think there's ever been a boring Austin San Jose game.
Exactly.
Those are always a little spicy.
Right there. That could be one of the more entertaining matches of all of Decision Day when we fast forward this to the end of the season.
If it still matters for Austin, because you said we need 11 points, but like that's a lot easier said than done for a team who's lost seven in a row.
They had
a draw in there, didn't they? But
11 points is what I think that you could say if we get that. Historically, numbers speaking, that'll put you at 44. That should get you into the playoffs. Now, obviously, things have been crazier, and the West has been crazy, not in the greatest way, but sort of everybody's been in just this big mess, and who's going to come out looking the shiniest of the messy?
Yeah, it feels like nobody wants to, like, be in it. You know, it feels like everybody's fighting to, like, finish below the line, and it's been a wild year for us.
I have a question for both of you two. How are you going to feel when you see a certain Diego Fagundes wearing a different jersey coming back into Q2 Stadium? What's that going to be like for both of you two as fans?
That was my next question, Gene.
I got to see you first. Good. Great minds think alike. You get to answer this. What's Mike, it going to be like for you, Landon?
Mike, I was going to ask you, because I'm is known as a joyless nerd. Who like stuff like this kind of gets lost on me sometimes. Mike is someone who very much appreciates a moment. And so
he's a joyful nerd then. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
All right. I'm a joyful nerd too. So go ahead.
So I grew up watching Diego play for New England Revolution. And so when I moved down to Austin, I was watching Revs games from afar. And then I found out we were getting our own team. Right. And so all the Rev stuff, gone. And that first year, my favorite player from the Revolution, not named Lee Wynn, is coming to join Austin FC. This is the best, right? I've been on top of the world since then. And then tragedy struck. But you know, I am excited to yell rude things for a full 90 minutes at Diego, and then applaud him as soon as the game is over.
What if you say a rude thing and Diego picks you out of the entire crowd and he looks at you and gives you like a terrible look? Would you stick by it for the 90 minutes or would you fold go, I'm so sorry, I was just kidding. I've been a big, big fan. I'm so sorry.
No, I feel like he knows what the Austin vibe is, right? Like, we have our boys' backs for the full match. Everything outside of that is what it is, but like within the time frame of that 90 minutes, there's no other team in the world.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, Landon. Sorry to jump in real quick. If Diego comes to you before the game and goes, "Mike, it's so good to see you. I'm so happy to be back. Hey, I've got a jersey for you to wear." And it's like a fresh one that he just wore last week, but it's washed. And he gives it to you. And he says, "But the only thing is, the only way for you to wear it is you have to wear this tonight during the game. It's an LA Galaxy jersey."
Yeah, nah, dog. Not happening.
I know the answer.
And never. He's going to sign it and everything for you after never. The game.
Never.
Doesn't never. Matter. I love never. Your fandom. I love that so much.
Best team in the world, Jamie. I can't help it. We got the best team in the world. Why would I cheer for another one?
Mike, what do you think the overall reception in the stadium is going to be? Do you think it'll be similar to that? Like, we'll cheer him at the beginning, yell at him for 90 minutes, and then cheer him at the end, probably?
I hope so. I hope if it's anything else, I'd be disappointed, but I really hope that's the vibe. Because like that's what he deserves. He came in, he put his heart on the line for the team for as long as he was here, and now it's business. And
You make a good point there. And you know what I like, Mike, that you said in there? It's one of my favorite sayings, and it's actually a former coach that I first started playing for in Austin with the Austin Aztecs, was Adrian Heath. And one of his best lines, he said it all throughout my career, whether it was in Austin, Orlando, I heard him say it in Minnesota later on when he was the coach there, and it always rings true. I think one of the best things that you can do as a player, and this is the best motivation I ever heard as a player from a manager, was go out there and play as if you would any one of those fans would play like if they got the opportunity to wear the jersey for this night only. And when you say that, you think like if I said to you, "Mike, you get to play for Austin FC for one night," how hard would you play?
It would be the best 7-minute shift you ever saw in your life, Danny.
So go out and give the best 7 minutes that you possibly can, right? And look, I mean, that's it. When you say that and you put that into perspective, you know what I mean? Like way you just said it, and like the smile you had on your face when you said it was just ever present right then, that you would go out and you would run through a brick wall happily because you would hope that on the other end of it, you could score a goal for your team that gives you three points at Q2 Stadium. That's what Diego always did. Was I think he was a player that played like any fan would if they got an opportunity to wear the jersey for one night. And I think that's why fans loved him and first in New England, but then especially in Austin. That's why he got, going away tailgate like he did. It doesn't happen for very few or for very many. So he's one of the
I was going to say, Jamie, in your career, did you ever have a going away tailgate like that or anything similar?
Yeah, I did. It was actually from my family. That was it. They were the only ones. It was because I was just getting an Uber outside of out of the driveway, and then Uber Eats was coming. So we weren't actually eating. It was just two ships passing over the driveway. That was my going away tailgate.
Going away to college. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Jamie, thanks so much for joining us again, man. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can do it again soon. And look forward to the broadcast on Wednesday.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks so much.
All right. We want to thank Jamie Watson one more time. We would also like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us online at LVRHale87, Jeremiah's at JBentley_ATX, and Mike is at
FutureXSkeleton everywhere across the internet.
There you go. And then we are at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Also encourage you to sign up for the Patreon. We greatly appreciate your support, and it is the reason why we keep doing this, even in dark moments like these. We'd also encourage you to sign up for Phil West's Substack, which is called Verde All Day. That's verdeallday.substack.com/moontower, and you will get a 20% discount. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week to recap this week's two games, and then we'll preview the away match in Colorado and then cover any other Austin FC news. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
And I'm Mike Crignola.
We'll catch you next time.
When no one is around.
thing for nothing, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.